the city where they filmed the movie is literally a pre-planned seaside community in Florida called Seaside, Florida. So, but it
is secretly in a dome.
Yeah.
Black Market Toast Podcast, where we take a piece of media out of the cupboard, dust it off, toast it up, and serve it as something completely new. This is episode number 74, and this time we are jumping off of The Truman Show, which was probably the first time we saw Jim Carrey in a dramatic role.
That's actually what I was going to say. Yeah, I think this was Jim Carrey's like dramatic debut.
Yeah.
Because I think before this he'd done like The Mask and Ace Ventura.
And Ace Ventura 2. Yes.
So yeah, this was the first time we saw like semi-serious Jim Carrey. I mean, there were some funny parts to the movie, but it was a much more serious role. And I mean, and it got like Oscar buzz too, so it was it was a legit movie.
Yeah, and I was struck kind of watching it, and I was like, if they just shorten this down to about half an hour, this could be an episode of Black Mirror.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah, well, and that's the funny thing. The movie was actually based off of a Twilight Zone episode.
Okay.
So that explains the Black Mirror.
So it is
an episode of Black Mirror, yeah.
Because Black Mirror is just the Twilight Zone with technology.
Yeah. So yeah. Which is why we might watch it next week. I'm digging the shit out of that show. But yeah. So, I mean, essentially it is a giant Twilight Zone episode. Or it's a Twilight Zone episode expounded upon.
Yes. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, we're not going to tell you. Basically, it's about a guy who was born to be on TV, and his entire world around him
has
created,
been fake.
And he lives within a dome, and he finally, you know, he finally gets the wanderlust that anyone would get, and decides to try to leave. But they've conditioned him to fear the sea and fear change and fear leaving. And it's a social commentary on, you know, how much manipulation of a person's psyche can you do before it's torture.
Right.
And, you know, it touches on all kinds of
issues. There are religious analogies. There's like dystopian analogies. There's psychoanalytical crazy stuff.
By dystopian, you mean just every day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
but not the dystopia we were promised by 1990s music videos.
No.
Because there the is dystopia no path
we were,
to that.
Yeah, more the dystopia we were promised by George Orwell. Like, it's, you know, where everything is filmed and, you know, on a broader level, are we all really just on camera all the time?
Which we pretty much are at this point.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, and the other thing is, it's the... This was really what brought the incoming like voyeuristic society that we live in to the forefront.
Right.
Like
this
movie came out when it was still considered science fiction.
Yeah, I mean, this came out pre-Survivor.
Yes, but within 3 years.
And also pre-Matrix. But it introduced a lot of things that the Matrix would then say.
Correct.
But the Matrix had to
definitely watch this.
Yeah, I mean, the Matrix was 1 year later, so it was already in production and probably already wrapped because of the amount of post production they had to do on that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know it was 1 year later that the TV show Big Brother came out in the UK.
Okay.
And so, and essentially, Big Brother was just a straight up rip-off of the Truman Show, except everybody knew they were on camera.
Right.
So yeah, it was a ripoff of the last half of the movie.
Yeah. Except nobody was freaking out and trying to get out.
Right.
And realizing that everyone's watching them.
Yeah. Right. But yeah, it was, and that's the crazy thing. Like, usually when you see a science fiction type movie, which I guess this is sort of considered sci-fi.
But
usually when things are, you know, considered science fiction, it's years and decades before what they did kind of becomes a part of society, but this was a year or two before.
And
I almost feels like a marketing ploy or like a curtain jerker for, hey, this is what TV is going to be like for the next 20 years. You know, we're just preparing you now.
Yeah, but it kind of almost hits closer to home just because it is this, you know, it's this science fiction story, but it's set in a very wholesome, down-to-earth environment. You know, you have topics that are explored in The Matrix and Dark City and movies like that.
Right.
But it's,
that are very heavy.
You're right. You know, but it's on the sunny backdrop of a small island town.
Yeah.
You know, a small fishing village.
Yeah.
So it makes it more palatable and more, it kind of sinks in more to the average viewer as, okay, this is more me.
It does. It as personalizes opposed to and humanizes the yeah. story a lot more.
Yeah, as opposed to the fantastical thing over there.
Right.
Yes.
The Matrix.
Yes.
Yeah. But yeah, no, and you're right. And it's ironic because, like, in doing research for it, like, the city where they filmed the movie is literally a pre-planned seaside community in Florida called Seaside, Florida. So, but it
which is secretly in a dome.
Yeah. Dome already came included. Saved them a ton on production.
Hell yeah.
But no, and it was a pre-planned community. Of, you know, everyone's house is going to look like this, and everybody has this. It's very Stepford.
Yes, very much. I would not live there.
Right, exactly. Yes. like I said, it was so close to the dawning. And I mean, and we had like proto-reality TV already.
Mm-hmm.
We had The Real World.
Yes.
You know, which I guess is it gets credit as the first reality show.
The predecessor to the reality boom.
But this really was like I said, it was so close to when reality TV became a thing that it almost feels like they were just telling us, this is what you're going to be watching.
But then,
this is how life is now.
But they painted it in a negative light. Anyone who watched this should be appalled by reality TV.
Right. But
because you understand that the producer is manipulating everything, and anyone who watches this and then goes and watches Big Brother is like, oh my god, they're jerking those people around just for entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And no, and you're absolutely right. So maybe it's not a, like, this is how things are going to be, but somebody saw where it was going and was like, I should probably let everybody know about this.
We should probably have a commentary on this. Yeah. This is coming, and I don't like it.
But that's it. Like, had this movie come out 10 years later, it would have been a phenomenal social commentary about the rise of reality television. But because it came out before reality television,
we don't think about it.
Right, we don't think about it, and it makes it kind of science fiction instead of social commentary.
Yeah, but we didn't know it was science fiction.
Right.
We didn't know it was telling us about the future.
Right. Next year. But
just because it's not flying cars doesn't mean it's not the future.
Right. No, it's true. But it also makes me think that some, like, television producer was sitting there watching this movie going, I could find some schmucks that could jerk around my camera for money.
That looks like fun.
Yeah. I want to be the asshole, you know, and then made it so. But I don't know. But that's kind of what it's rare to find a movie that was like futuristic and kind of science fiction when it came out. But then like 10 years later is social commentary.
1 year later.
One year later in social commentary. It's just crazy. Like, the timing of the movie, it adds to the kind of the brilliance of the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it really was, like, this movie was buying Bitcoin in 2012. Like,
for $100.
Yeah, and no, for $12.50.
Yes, but if you bought $100 worth, it's $100 million now.
Right, yeah. Yes. Yeah, but that's it. So, yeah, but it was so early.
Right.
Like, it wasn't even before the crest of the wave. This was, like, while the wave was forming in the distance, like, this was there. It's brilliant. It really is. And looking at the movie's
age, see you using a stormy ocean analogy with this movie. That was slick there.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it.
That was being disingenuous.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I was faking my gratitude.
Yay!
But no, I don't know. I really enjoyed it, though. And the movie's aged very well.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we still had so much reality television.
Yes, because it's still pertinent today.
Right, right. It was so ahead of its time that it's still of its time.
Yes, but it didn't feel ahead of its time when it came out. That's the thing. It felt of the time with a commentary on something that wasn't happening.
Yeah.
But now it feels of the time with a commentary of something that is happening.
Yeah. And that's the thing. But people don't. Like, people know that most of these reality shows are rigged.
Mm-hmm.
They know that most of these, like sort of documentary type shows where, you know, like Swamp People and the Pawn Shop Show.
Yeah.
Like, they know that it's all fake, but they don't care.
Well, but even on a more of a granular level, it's almost a commentary on, like, genetic manipulation and stuff like that, where we're trying to create the perfect reality for the people of the future by manipulating who they are.
Right.
Which is essentially what they did with Truman.
Yeah.
You know, they manipulated who he was with, you know, losing his father, you know.
Yeah. By creating this backstory and his whole, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, putting these fears in him and shaping who he is on the back end. And just creating this, you know, neurotic almost person who then becomes neurotic enough to, you know, start to believe the conspiracies and realize that, oh my God, I'm always on television.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because they didn't really do the best job of covering it up. But, you know.
But it was the mid 90s.
It's a movie.
Yeah, it's also a movie. Yeah, Truman couldn't wander around for 9 days of film time trying to figure, you know, put pieces together.
Yes, yes.
With his crazy little, like, conspiracy board in his basement.
We can't show you 25 years of little things that make him go, oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to all happen. Yeah,
things had to unravel pretty quick.
Within the span of a week, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I was sitting there because when you said it, I was like, God, I think I remember seeing that movie.
Yeah.
But I was like 20 years old.
Yes, yes. And I haven't seen it since. I hadn't seen it since you know, last week when I watched it.
Right, because I think when I watched it, I thought, oh, cool, Jim Carrey made another comedy. And then I watched it.
That wasn't a comedy.
I wasn't quite old enough to appreciate it. Yeah. Yeah, I was ready for, like, Liar Liar to come out, which was much funnier.
Well, and, you know, I had just made it through... I had just finished up Black Mirror and, you know, and went through the list of things that just came out, and boom, this was there. And I was like, that's fitting. Let's go.
Nice.
I think.
Yeah.
I didn't really think of it as a Black Mirror episode, but definitely watching it after watching the latest season of Black Mirror, it's like, yeah, that's the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So,
welcome to the 12-minute lull.
Pretty much. No, I'm just kind of trying to figure out where to take it from there.
Yeah, we have to pivot in tangents.
We do have to pivot. That's what we do. But it, like I said, we've had Big Brother that came out after that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's really the closest we've gotten. Is it to the Truman Show? Is Big Brother?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, all of them are, really. I mean...
Yeah, well, and it's funny because now in some
The Bachelor has elements of it because, I don't know.
In some ways, like...
Everything has elements of it.
Yeah.
You know, that is reality.
But in some ways, social media has become our Truman Show.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you choose to, you can always be on camera.
Yes.
You can always be posting where you are, what you're doing. You know you are.
Yes.
But you can broadcast your life to the masses, which is this really... crazy concept.
Yes.
You know, I'm not one of those people. Like, I think if you look at all my social media, like, especially, like, Instagram, where you're supposed to post pictures, I don't have a selfie. I think I have one selfie on Instagram.
Yeah, I don't know why you don't let your dogs control their social media. I don't know why you are dictating what they share.
They're my Trumans. They're all my little Trumans. And when they do something cute, I let everybody see it.
Mwahaha.
Mwahaha.
You are the director.
Yes, pretty much.
Dance for me, dogs.
Please. You've met my dogs. Like, if you ask them to dance, they just stare at you, like, cock their head and be like,
Yeah, you can piss off? Doesn't mean you didn't say it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. What?
We just ran out. We just hit a wall.
We didn't kind of run out and hit a wall. But I guess, because the other thing that fascinated me was this was Jim Carrey's first dramatic role.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was his best role.
Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah. But a dude that's had two completely, like, he makes two types of movies, essentially.
Yeah. Way over the top comedies.
Or, like, really hardcore, like, he's... Yeah. Yeah, so there's something that came out, it's on Netflix now, where it's called Jim and Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Have you watched it?
Yeah,
where yeah. It talks about, like, Jim
and... Yeah, I haven't seen Man on the Moon, so that might be his best role, but I've heard of...
If you watch Jim and Andy, yeah, like...
He just goes such a deep dive.
He's fucking Daniel Day-Lewis level method acting.
Yes,
which
yes.
You, I find strange for a guy who is such a comedian and such a...
But
it makes sense.
But, yeah, it makes sense because no matter what, he was... always all in on every character he ever was.
That's true. And it was what made his comedy roles funny.
Yes.
But, I mean, to have a guy that can just get that deep into a character, like, it's impressive because I don't have that kind of dedication to anything.
Right.
Like, I don't. I hate to break it down, but I'm not that motivated of a person.
Woohoo! Yeah.
But to essentially say, not only am I going to play this person or this character, but I'm going to embody that person mm-hmm. and literally live that person.
Right.
That's great. Like, that's the difference between, like, your average person doing plays and
Daniel
Day-Lewis.
The people on the next level.
Yeah, the people on that top level of acting.
The people who are considered good actors, not because they're beautiful, but because
they're good at
their
job.
They just do it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're good at their job.
Yes.
And I mean, and that's not to say that Jim Carrey's ever going to like win an Oscar or whatever.
Right, right.
But the dedication, nonetheless, is very impressive.
Yes, yes.
And like method acting can be dangerous as hell.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like the more you watch Jim and Andy, the more you realize like Jim Carrey left a piece of himself in that movie.
Right.
And I liked Man on the Moon. I watched Man on the Moon when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I've
always intended to.
I'm a big Andy Kaufman fan.
Yeah.
And so, like, I appreciated his style of comedy, but that's kind of me. I like those kind of...
Fucking weirdo.
Yeah, fucking weirdo. Yeah. But I do like those... Like, I'm a big comedy fan.
Yeah,
I watch a lot of comedy specials,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of a me thing, which is why I haven't been like, hey, let's watch a comedy special for the show.
I mean, I'm good with that, but anyway.
Well, then I'll find one. But he, like Andy Kaufman,
but we may have
guys.
Completely different taste in comedy. That's
right.
That's the thing.
That's the thing of comedy is that everybody's got their own taste,
right?
And Andy Kaufman was one of those guys. Like he, not everybody got him. Like to this day, not everybody got him. But
right, right.
The people that I find funny find him hilarious.
Yeah.
So they're like that's why I liked Andy Kaufman. I wanted to look more into him because
yes.
Why do all these people that I think are funny think he's the funniest guy that's ever lived, you know, so...
Because he went entirely too far on everything.
Exactly. But he was another guy, like Jim Carrey, who said, I'm going to completely sell out for this.
Yes, yes.
You know, and he would sell out for these roles in the, you know, women's wrestling and, like, fighting Jerry Lawler and all this weird stuff.
Going on stage is a completely different persona, but occasionally it was a different guy.
Yeah. Yeah, which was
completely
the funny part about it. Yeah. Yeah, which I mean, but he was ahead of his time.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, comedy wise, but yeah. it is crazy to see these kind of next level, you know, thinkers or not really thinkers, but next level actors kind of.
But yeah, I mean, like with Kaufman, with Belushi, that kind usually comes to a flaming.
They
end.
Burn out bright.
Yeah, they
yeah,
burn
they
out.
They burn out
hard.
Bright and quick
and. Jim Carrey kind of burned out after Kick-Ass 2. Cause
I never even saw Kick-Ass 2.
Me neither. But it didn't get much publicity because Jim Carrey's character was heavy, heavy guns.
Okay.
And then Sandy Hook happened right before it released.
Oh,
and
shit.
And Jim Carrey railed against his role.
He sabotaged his own movie.
Yeah, he went all in on the role.
Right.
And then looking back at it, he was just disgusted
petrified.
At
yeah.
what he had done.
Okay, I got you.
So, yeah, he kind of sabotaged his own career there.
Okay.
So
I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of burned out with that. You know, he didn't burn out as in, you know, suicide or drug overdose.
But he just like kind some of the other ones, checked out.
But he just kind of went, okay, yeah, I do this. I lock in on a character and I do that. And that's not okay in this instance. And he hasn't really done anything since then. So I think he's kind of afraid of the person that he can become
right.
when he loses himself into a role.
Well, and that's a good point. It's one of those things where with great power comes great mm-hmm. responsibility. Like when you're able to sell out that much for a role, I guess from his perspective, he could see where that could influence other people
right.
to have those opinions and take those stands.
And a lot of those type of method actors will not see their family when they're doing a role.
Yeah.
You know, they will not. They basically sequester themselves. They do their work and they get the fuck out and they don't deal with anybody else because they're in that role and they're going to apply that.
Right.
Jared Leto is prime example with the Joker, and he was a complete asshole to everybody, and nobody involved with fucking Suicide Squad ever wants to work with him ever again, but that's because he was the fucking Joker.
Right. 100% of the time.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, in a way I respect it, because it adds a certain authenticity.
Right.
Honestly, Joker is probably the best part of Suicide Squad.
I still haven't seen it.
Okay.
I haven't seen a DCEU movie since Man of Steel.
Okay. I can understand why you quit. Man of Steel was a turd.
I enjoyed Man of Steel.
Really? Okay.
I just haven't gotten around to it. Okay. You know, Batman vs. Superman came out and I was just like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Suicide Squad, I'm like, okay. Yeah. And then Justice League, you know, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to see Wonder Woman, but I haven't seen anything else that goes along with it. So, right. Do I really want to see Wonder Woman? I don't know.
Yeah, or Justice League.
So, I don't know. I'll keep watching the Marvel movies, and that'll be fine.
I don't blame you.
And even those, a lot of them, I'm waiting until they hit Netflix, you know?
Yeah. Until Disney releases their little streaming service.
You have
to pay more to watch then.
Yay.
But they would...
But maybe since they're going to own like 2/3 of Hulu once the Fox deal goes through.
That's true.
Maybe Hulu will roll that shit in.
Yeah. Pay an extra $5 a month to Hulu and you get the Marvel stuff.
Yeah. Man, we're already paying extra however much for HBO, so...
Oh, yeah. See, I don't...
Yeah.
I get HBO and like
that's our one splurge. You know?
I get 1 month increments of HBO. Like when I want to watch something,
okay,
Game of Thrones.
The entire season of the Game of Thrones is over.
I will watch the whole thing. Let me watch it in 2 weeks.
Unfortunately, you have to call in sick to work because it takes the entire month to watch a season of Game of Thrones,
which is only a quarter of the time it took to fucking read Game of Thrones. So.
1/1,000,000th of the time it takes to write one book.
Yes.
Just ask George R. R. Martin.
But just 1/10th of the time it takes to actually write Game of Thrones. But it's, I don't know. But, like, Jared Leto, he interpreted this character, and I could see what he did.
Yeah.
He watched everybody who played the Joker, from the actor whose name I wish I could remember from the old Adam West one.
Cesar Romero,
that's who it was.
To Jack Nicholson,
he went through the whole thing.
Yeah.
He watched everybody's interpretation of the Joker, and then he tried to figure out a way to make his character different.
Right.
Like, he wanted to play a different side, and actually his Joker's closest to... Does Mark Hamill voice the Joker in Batman?
Yes.
His version is closer to Mark Hamill's Joker than anybody else's.
Well, and there's been speculation the whole time that it's actually the Jason Todd Joker.
Okay.
But there are little Easter eggs in the film that could point that way.
It's true.
Because there's evidence that there was a Robin and it says ha 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 over the Robin suit.
Right.
Which could be, okay, the Jason Todd Robin then became the Jason Todd Joker, which is a thing that happened in the comics apparently. So...
Yeah, and if you want to take Suicide Squad in that direction, that'd probably be smart.
Yeah,
because, you get it away from the main like DC storyline of the
I mean, well, then you know there hasn't been a Robin in the current DCEU,
right?
But that would differentiate the current DCEU from the Dick Grayson background,
yeah,
you know, of the older Batman movies.
Right.
So, yeah.
It would be smart if that's how they did it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it'll need to pay off at some point.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, but you could tell, like, that's sort of what he did was he watched everybody else's Joker and sort of tried to, okay, this is how I'm going to be different. I want to try to personally define this role
yes.
in my own way. And either you like it or you don't. I thought it was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, but...
But that'll have to come out in Justice League for Forever Battle.
Yeah.
Not Infinity War.
No.
Forever Battle.
Fight forever.
We are not ripping off Marvel at all.
Negative. Except he is.
We called it something else.
Yeah. But it, yeah. But I can appreciate the... Because you don't want to... Like, from his perspective, you don't want to half-ass that role.
Right. Like, and you also don't want to do the same thing somebody else has already done.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to George Clooney this Batman role. Where you just show up...
Val Kilmer this Batman role.
Yeah, or Val Kilmer this Batman role. Which is a shame, because I love Val Kilmer. But, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to half-ass it, you know, because messing up a role like that can tarnish your entire career.
Right. But apparently... Going all in on a role like that can tarnish your entire career.
Yeah, that's true.
But basically, accepting a role like that can tarnish your entire career.
It can make you or break you.
Yes.
I mean, although I can say this.
And it broke Heath Ledger.
Right, it broke Heath Ledger. And on a very morbid, from a career legacy perspective...
It was an amazing move.
It was.
But for a personal perspective,
right, it ruined
it
him
was
personally.
Devastating.
Right. He literally gave everything for that role.
Yes.
It literally killed him.
Yes.
You know, but his legacy as an actor, because it happened that way, infinitely better.
Yes.
Than, you know, if you're watching...
That guy from A Knight's Tale.
Right, yeah. If you're watching A Knight's Tale...
And Ten Things I Hate About You.
Which was something I was considering making us watch for the next movie, because I actually like that movie.
I mean, it's The Taming of the Shrew. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. We may wind up watching it. We have it if you need to borrow it. But
I'm sure it's somewhere.
Yeah. But, yeah, you would never go, wow, that guy's an amazing actor.
Mm-hmm.
But because he died after his greatest role, you know, his career will forever be elevated in the eyes of everyone.
Yes, yes.
So, there is a benefit to method acting if you don't let it consume you. But the personalities that do it are the ones that generally
allow
get consumed
it to consume
by
you.
It.
Right,
yes, right.
Because they hand themselves over to it.
Right.
And that's what makes them great, but it's also what makes them vulnerable.
Right. And eventually, if you keep giving a little piece of yourself to all these roles, there's not a lot of you left.
Yes.
You know. So, I've never been a method acting guy.
Like, yeah.
Good for you if you can do it, but just watch yourself.
Yes. Okay. We've got 27 minutes.
That's pretty decent.
That's okay.
Really is, but it's solid.
It's solid. It's 27. You know, there was a little break in there about the 12-minute mark.
The
another
usual.
Another one around 18, and then one at about 27.
Yeah. But they weren't long. I mean,
No. It seems like longer when we're sitting here staring at each other going, the fuck do we say?
Yeah. No, dead air always feels that way. Dead air always feels infinitely longer than it is. But it, like I said, it was a good movie.
We got ourselves into this role.
Yes.
And we really wanted
to
just...
sold out for this podcast.
We just wanted to embody it to the fullest and become John and Joe. Because that's not actually who we are.
No.
We are characters for your enjoyment.
Yes.
So, on that note, what are we going to jump off of next time?
Well, you know, I mentioned it.
You mentioned several things throughout this podcast that we might do.
That we might
do. And you mentioned something else last time after we
did.
We wrapped.
I mean, it's...
So,
I don't know.
Now it's the decision time, Joe.
It is decision time.
But unfortunately, the Joe character is awful at making decisions about what we're going to do.
The Joe human being is awful. It's really funny. For somebody who literally has a job where my job is to make decisions, I suck at making decisions outside of work. Because it's
but we don't have a large book of things to guide you on how to make this decision.
I don't use that book.
but it's there. Yeah.
I just don't do anything that goes against it.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah.
I work completely freeform within the codex of that book.
Within the confines of that book.
Yes. I guess because it came out, or because it's sort of, it's in the, they just released another movie about it, The Disaster Artist. It is actually an anniversary movie. It came out in 2003, so it's 15 years ago.
You're going to actually make me watch this.
I'm going to make you watch The Room.
Because yeah. I have not watched it. I understand what it is and why it is great awful, but okay, I have never watched
it. You know me, I love bad movies.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to watch The Room.
Yeah, from what I've heard, it's not really available anywhere. So you may have to...
At the very worst, I'll torrent it.
Figure out how to get it to me, yes.
Yeah.
Because apparently, well, that's things we can discuss next time.
Yes.
Because we don't want to use up our content, because that'll make us stop at like 9 minutes and look at each other awkwardly.
That's true.
Instead of 12.
But it would still be less awkward than The Fucking Room's going to be. So, spoiler alert.
So, I am at Woodle on the Twitter and the Instagram.
I'm That Joe You Know on Instagram.
And we will talk at you next time.